Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Payne Cosby, and today I'm joined by Brianna, who is the head of marketing over at Bench Prep. Brianna, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thanks for having me. This should be fun.
I'm super stoked to dig into it because, I mean, we've talked previously. You guys have really built out some pretty awesome programs that have repeatedly gotten more pipeline and revenue for Bench Prep. And the other thing, you're kind of a unicorn in the tech SaaS space because you've actually stayed at an organization for like almost 7 years. So you've seen lots of iterations of the program from beginning to end, which is, I mean, most SaaS people are in and out in 2 to 3 years. So I'm excited to hear how you started, how you've had some iterations over time, and what it looks like today. So that said, we always start with how to actually find your audience, which is always the most difficult part. So as you thought about targeting, how do you determine the right people to even go after?
Yeah, so this is, it's interesting you say this can be challenging for many because I get that. For us, it was actually quite easy, and it's because of a shift that we made several years ago to really think about who we serve and where we find success. And so through my 7 years at Bench Prep, which I'll take unicorn as a compliment, but through that time, I definitely have seen the evolution of casting wide net and then year over year kind of getting a little bit more niche and really figuring out, again, who we want to serve. We've also been a very small marketing team, so I feel like that really helped us as well, getting really specific about who we target. So a couple of years ago, we took a hard, long look at ourselves, looked at our platform, and recognized that we are best suited for nonprofit associations and credentialing organizations who serve professional learners with high stakes learning. So think, you know, association members who are looking to obtain some sort of high stakes certification or license or something like that. So we really boiled it down. And so our primary segments are those nonprofit associations and credentialing bodies. We previously worked with, you know, training companies or, you know, enterprise level software companies and things like that. And due to a long list of challenges I won't get into here, we decided let's really go all in on these other groups. And so that helped us with our ABM campaign. We knew we wanted to target those segments. And each of those segments, associations versus credentialing bodies, has very unique challenges from each other. They speak differently from each other. The way they speak to their learners is very different. So those two segments were the two that we decided to go all in on. And from there, we really looked at the accounts. I mean, account-based marketing, I think this is the natural next step. So we looked at accounts who either provided exam preparation for those certifications directly. So they weren't using a third-party provider. They were providing those resources directly from their organization. So we added on some filters to kind of hone in on a small subset. But that, from like a target audience perspective, it was rather easy for us. We knew going into it exactly who to reach.
I'm always curious when organizations do that niche down exercise, depending on the team you've got working with you, like that is sometimes a very hard fought battle because you've got to work through. I know it's crazy. We're going to intentionally work with fewer kinds of people and it will be better for the business. So I'm curious, like, as you guys had those kinds of conversations, was there any kind of pushback or was it more of a, as an organization, we recognize we've got a niche down?
It was a mindset shift that we all had to buy into for sure. I mean, being a marketer, we want as many leads as possible. I want to work as many accounts as possible from a sales perspective. And so I think, you know, there was a lot of conversation that went into it. And I think the mindset shift was really helping cross-functional folks understand, like, the more focus we have, the more impact our work will have. And so I always say to my team, like, is the juice worth the squeeze? And so we really wanted to focus in on the quality over quantity. And thankfully, everyone was bought into it. I mean, it took some work. But I think, again, the more focus you can give to your efforts, the more impact and results you're going to see. And that has proven to be true for us over the years. The tighter we got on our focus, the more impact we saw in our work and efforts. And there's still a long way to go. Like, we're still in some ways casting that wide net, but we've made significant improvements, especially over the last 7 years that I've been with Bench Prep.
I love it. And I mean, if you just think through it, like, it just makes a lot of sense. We're going to make sure we have a more targeted approach so that those that are our best customers know we exist. So when sales reaches out, they have a higher likelihood of answering.
Exactly. Like,
there's only so many dollars. So if we're going to get really focused, those dollars will just go further. So
yep.
I love that breakdown. I'm then always curious, because a lot of people, especially when they go through that niche down exercise, they may have a wide variety of channels that they're using, but their now niche down audience may not show up in some of those channels. So I'm curious, as you then think through the channel mix, how did you determine the right places to even show up?
That's a great question. The channel mix from when I started to where we are today looks so different. And so we had to get really realistic about the ROI of our channels. We, at some point, maybe about midway through my career at Bench Prep, decided to do completely away with paid ads. As you know, it's very pay to play. We were just wasting money, not seeing a return there. And so that was a big change that we decided to make, but I think it's been the right one. Especially as we niche down in our segments, but also with the use cases that we serve. So we got really hyper-focused on exam preparation. And so we, again, went away with paid search. We stopped doing paid social, and we really doubled down on the channels where we were performing well. And for us, that was webinars. This has changed over the course of years, pre-post-COVID, but conferences has been an evolving channel for us, one that wasn't really successful prior to COVID and now is actually one of our best performing channels, which is interesting. And so we, again, doubled down in the areas we were seeing results and did completely away with the channels where we weren't. And I'll say now our company is at kind of an inflection point. We're coming out with a lot of new and exciting features to expand our TAM. We're now focused on more use cases outside of just exam prep. And so this year is an interesting year because I'm having to consider bringing some of those channels back as we need to now create brand awareness in spaces that we previously weren't playing in. And so for a long time, we were really just hyper-focused on demand generation and kind of put brand to the back burner. We had been around for 10 years. Everyone knew us as exam prep platform. And so now, again, kind of reconsidering some of the things that maybe didn't work in the past and hoping to experiment a little bit more as we head into the second half of this year and go through some reforecasting exercises.
Yeah, it's... That's what sometimes is infuriating about being a marketer is you've got to learn and then unlearn things. And mm-hmm. even though something may not have worked in the past, a lot of things change. And mm-hmm. as a result, even though you may never have seen something from a paid channel previously, well, new audiences, new channels we should explore. So
exactly.
I'm really curious now, as you have to re-explore some channels that you previously into that may not have performed as well, how are you navigating those conversations to say we should re-explore this, even though I know it didn't maybe perform as well in the past?
Yeah, that's a hard conversation for sure. So I think having alignment from leadership around just where we are now looks different than where we were at that time when we made those decisions. And having a little room and budget for experimentation, I think, is always a really good call. So having a little bit of budget set aside for trying new things. And so thankfully, again, I've kind of been building that business case for the past several months. And I'm lucky enough to be, you know, working with other folks that understand, you know, that things are evolving. But it is a hard conversation. And it's, again, another mindset shift, even for myself, just thinking through, like, this didn't work in the past. Why would it work for us now? But so much has changed, even in regards to, like, AI, obviously, is having a huge impact in so many different ways. So really having to think about, okay, how do I view these channels even through that lens? And how do I need to be thinking about things for the future and not just for right now? So it's ever evolving. And I definitely feel like I'm not the only marketer feeling the pressure of having to kind of be on top with the ever-evolving space here. But again, I think if you can build that business case and even try to showcase like what potential ROI could look like with reinvestment into this channel and really understanding the objective, like the shift for us has been like, okay, this isn't for demand generation. Like we're not going to see attribution and pipeline from this, but this is why it's important. And I'm sure everyone can relate when I say, I think proving the business case for brand is exceptionally challenging. And so that's kind of where we are right now, is like helping folks understand the impact of brand outside of, you know, demand gen and making that shift.
Yeah, that is, especially as we've been building programs with clients, like there's always the, all right, so we're going to launch this ABM program and then we'll see pipeline in 3 months, right? Mm-hmm. Potentially, you know, if these accounts know that you exist. But a phrase that I've picked up in the past year and a half is exponentially more likely that someone will buy from you if they know you exist. So we should probably do some awareness programs, make sure they know we exist so they have the shot at buying from us.
Spot on, which is another reason why ABM for us was, or for me especially, was so interesting, because it's, there is a shift going even from like demand generation to ABM, but just recognizing like, why would we expect to see success or responses from these accounts who don't even have awareness of us as a vendor? And so I think that shift into ABM has been really exciting, and we're definitely seeing some good results, which I know we'll get into here, but.
I love it. So one of the other things that I've just been looking at a lot of the stats recently around just content utilization. Mm-hmm. And I'm just seeing that somewhere in the ballpark of 60 to 70% of content created by marketing isn't even put in market ever or utilized. So, I mean, especially because I know you guys are a relatively smaller marketing team, like you are, you got to make sure your resources are utilized well. So I'm curious, as you think through the content mix, how are you making sure you've got content that engages an audience and is actually utilized in market?
Oh, that is interesting, but also doesn't surprise me. I can think back on my career and there are many examples that pop up of like, oh, we spent so much time on that and then never did anything with it. So to your point, we've got a four-person marketing team now. We hired someone earlier this year. And everything that we do has a plan. Everything that we do is created with intention and has a defined objective. And anything where we can't tie it back to an objective or, you know, pipeline or whatever it might be, we're not doing it. So even every single blog that we put out, like we've got a reason behind it. Any piece of long form content, we've got a reason and strategy behind it. And so we're very intentional about our content. And obviously now with AI in the mix, I mean, it makes it easier than ever to just push so much content out. But to your point, and depending on your business and strategy, of course, like, is that the best route for you to go, just to push out as much content as possible? The answer might be yes, but for us, the answer is no. We have to be very intentional with our time and resources. And so we've, again, really thought through our quarterly content calendar, and we've got a promotional plan behind every single thing that we put out. And content is really what fuels our demand generation engine, but also our ABM campaigns. And so really thinking through, you know, the audience, what do we hope they take away from it? What is the CTA? All of that is really thought through before we even start creating any of the content.
I mean, especially in your context, like you sell exam preparation software for companies to teach and educate and certify people. Mm-hmm. So like if you have content that is AI slop that doesn't actually educate, like that's a reflection on the brand and the product. So like it makes a ton of sense that you guys would do a lot of extra work on the front end to say, does this actually educate and help and represent the brand well? Otherwise, it doesn't look great for an education software to not be great at education.
That's so true. That's such a solid point.
So we'll go ahead and dig into some of the results. I'm curious, as you guys then look at how do we measure success, what are some of the standard things that you actually look to as a way of indicating we are winning or we're losing, and especially as you're making this transition more towards that brand approach?
Yeah, measurements of success. So, I mean, I'm sure everybody says this, like the ultimate measure of success is revenue, pipeline and revenue. But you touched on this a little earlier, and that it's a slow burn. And that's something that we had to get everyone, like set that expectation up front before we even launched our first pilot ABM campaign, was like, we're not going to see this in the first month, maybe not even in the first 3 months. Like, who knows? And our sales cycles over the past couple of years have gotten even longer. So at this point, we're lucky to have a sales cycle that's less than 6 months, but we're seeing sales cycles 12, 18 months. And so just with that understanding, like it was easier for folks to like get why the, you know, results might not be seen immediately, but still there's just like that antsiness, which I feel myself as well. So outside, I felt like it was important then to set success metrics outside of pipeline and revenue. And so just engagement, like who are we seeing engage with us? Who has responded? Who has liked our LinkedIn posts? Any type of win, we've made sure to capture along the way so that we can report on those week over week. That again, at some point, and we are now seeing impact on pipeline, TBD on revenue coming soon. But I think it's really important to set, you know, those types of success metrics throughout the campaign as well, so that you know you're gaining traction, again, with the assumption that will turn into pipeline and revenue. But any type of win is a big win in my book.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you make that transition over towards brand, I've been having to do a lot more research on it ourselves because we're working with clients that want to break into new verticals. And it's like, well, it takes like 3 to 6 months to even have brand recall. Like, not even resonate with the problem, but just to remember that your brand exists. It's like 3 to 6 months of intentional programming. So I think you're spot on that like from first touch to actual like in pipeline may take 3 quarters. Because the other, we were talking about this right before we press record, like agency sales cycles, like I'm experiencing it at the time of this recording, like it's a really low pipeline volume from like May, June, July, and then you see a pretty significant spike in August. So like I could freak out right now by a low pipeline volume, or I can recognize like most of my buyers are on a vacation and like not looking to do an implementation on an ABM program. So if we like, and there are plenty of companies that like launch an ABM program in May, and then we're going to run a 3 month pilot and see how much pipeline we have by the end of July. And like, that's really dumb if you're buying like why? So it's,
I hear you.
Those basic things of like,
yeah,
well, maybe no one's buying right now because they're on vacation. So anyway, it's
The seasonality, you have to take that into consideration, which is why like we're hoping to, our goal is to have ABM running just constantly, because to your point earlier of how long it takes even just to have brand recall, like we're essentially targeting accounts, some of them which have no awareness of us. So the first step is just to create that, which can take time. And then those that do have awareness are not always in a buying cycle. So we have to be top of mind when they finally get there, so that when they're like, okay, we want to start exploring our options, or we want to buy an LMS, like they're going to think of us because we've been engaging with them for the past 6 months. And so you have to really think through like, is it just seasonal slowness, which summer is usually a pretty consistent slow time for most people. And then you have to be patient.
Love it. So as you've been building out an ABM program, I'm curious, what was something that popped up along the way that you were not expecting that ended up being a setback?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe the time that it takes to do ABM. I feel like knew that taking and we do one-to-one. So we're targeting one-to-one accounts. I know there's, you know, one to few or one to many, which I think maybe you at some point said like, that's perhaps just demand generation. So we're taking like a very targeted one-to-one approach. And the time that it takes to do that, like should not be overlooked. To do appropriate account and contact research, our industry, I feel like people typically stay at jobs for like 20 plus years, but then everyone, like you have to make sure one, that they're still working at the organization. We're very LinkedIn first. So like, are they active on LinkedIn? So there's a bunch of just, you know, steps that you need to go through before you even get something off the ground. And then, you know, week over week, okay, who engaged with us? What posts were, you know, getting the best results? Did this person respond to your connection? Like all those little things, it takes a lot of time. So that's something that I definitely was surprised by. I think it was a little bit of a setback just in terms of like how much time it also takes to create the content. So you're, you know, monitoring the overall campaign, but then you're also feeding in one-to-one content into, you know, whatever channels you're using, which also takes a lot of time. And so just being a smaller organization, that was something that I feel like we had some challenges with as we now go into our kind of second campaign, we made sure up front to kind of set expectations with everybody who's supporting this campaign of, okay, you need to set at least 30 minutes every day on your calendar to do this engagement. I've got calendar blocks on my side for the content creation. So it's not to be overlooked. And I do feel like ABM really is like what you put into it are the results that you're going to see back. So the weeks where we didn't really have as much time to invest, which happens, those were the slower weeks for the campaign. The weeks where we were really going all in and doing, you know, the one-to-one outreach and creating content, that's when we started to see traction. So just something I think for folks to think about as they embark on ABM is, you know, the time commitment that you have available to it.
I generally couldn't agree more. we get this recording. I actually sat down with both our marketer and our seller because we're in a bunch of different programs. And it's a really helpful exercise for anybody that hasn't done this, which is just called the ideal calendar. So it's literally in a spreadsheet, map out like Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and put time blocks of what you plan to do during those times on a week in and week out basis. And then actually link up the SOPs for what you'll execute during those time blocks. Because if you can then map out your ideal calendar for what you actually know will you should be doing to drive the business forward, and you hit it like 60% of the time, because there are always things that pop up and that we weren't expecting, but like, all right, if I had the perfect week every week, what would it look like? Mm-hmm. And you hit it 60% of the time. It's a fantastic way for driving the business forward and then actually making sure that when you ask someone to do something, they actually have the time to do it.
I love that idea. I think to that point, like being very prescriptive of what the action items are for the next week. So we have a weekly team meeting for everyone involved in the campaign where we do a look back on the previous week, see, you know, what the engagement looked like, what accounts we should focus on, et cetera. And then I always kind of clean up everything with like, these are the action items for next week. But I love plugging that into a more specific, like, okay, on Monday, these are the three things I'm going to do. You know, Wednesday, this is the hour I'm going to spend writing content. So I like taking it that one step further.
Awesome. Well, last question for you, which was just pretty simple of, you had a set of expectations when you went to go launch your first ABM program, and now you're on the other side of that. So I'm curious, as you reflect back, what's one thing you wish you had known before you would launch your first program?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I kind of already touched about just how much time this type of strategy really takes. So that's something that I would just kind of double down on. And I also think the other thing is it's a shift from, you know, quantity to quality. And so I was going into the campaign thinking like, okay, we want like 100 accounts. And like, that's again, this might not be true for everybody, but for us, that was way too many. And so we really had to continue to filter down those accounts to, I think we got to about 50, which felt manageable, and it's still a big time commitment. And so for us, that one-to-one approach has been something that I'm seeing be most impactful. So again, I think just the shift from, I want, you know, as many accounts as possible, it's just not feasible to do, you know, impactful ABM work with that many accounts, depending on your team size. So that's something we kind of had to learn through our pilot campaign. And we, you know, again, kind of added some additional filters to get really specific as we embark into this next campaign. But that's, again, just a shift. I was a demand gen marketer. It's very different, tactics and expectations and things like that.
Yeah. Going from market size for this program's like 10,000 people to we're going to focus on 50 is a massive shift. So I just love the resetting of expectations on time commitment. Because also you'd think, well, this program is going to reach 10,000 people. Should take more time than the program is going to reach 50. When in reality, I think it's the inverse. But anyway.
I totally agree. And I will say, I think a really interesting thing about ABM is we're actually starting to deploy ABM tactics in other ways as well. So like on our outbound sales side, like they're seeing like, okay, the one-to-one outreach is really working. And like just some of the approaches that we take with our engagements and things like that. So we're actually kind of getting to more like account-based selling on the outbound side as well, versus just like got a list of 100 accounts. Let's focus on the top 10 and like what are the tactics and things we want to do just for these 10 accounts. And we can always feed more into it. but I'm excited to see how that goes. So it's just been interesting, the overall shift that this strategy has had on other fronts of our business as well.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
LinkedIn is a great place. And send me a connection request. I'm always happy to talk about marketing strategy or ABM or whatever it might be. Always love learning from others as well.
Well, again, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you want to do an even deeper dive on building out your ABM program, we're actually hosting our next ABM in a Day workshop on November 13th. It is a full 6 hours digging into all of the reasons ABM programs fail and exactly how to fix them. And I know what you're thinking, 6 hours is a huge time investment. Admittedly, it is, but it's taking 6 hours to ensure you nail the next 6 months of your ABM program. In case you're wondering, is it worth it? The last time we hosted it, we got a 9.3 out of 10 on our content. So I can guarantee this is a worthwhile time investment to ensure you nail your ABM program. So if that sounds like something you'd like to do, go to scrappyabm.com/workshop to register today, and we'll see you on November 13th.